Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well. We've got a fun and exciting show for you today. Today, I'm talking to three design experts. Ladies, say hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Well, let's jump right in. So today I'm talking to Emma, Sabrina, and Alyssa. And to start with, we're going to have them share just a little bit about their background because it plays into our topic today, which is really this roundtable discussion of how visual designers bring a fresh perspective to learning. And that's our focus for today. So Alyssa, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? This isn't a job interview, don't worry, but in your background in design.
All right, can do. Hi, I'm Alyssa, and I'm in a team leadership position on a development team. My background is in graphic design and web design. I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts in graphic design, and I also have about 6 years of experience with visual design for digital and print products.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Emma, what about you?
Yes. Hi, I'm Emma. I graduated from Western Michigan University with a bachelor's degree in fine art, and I minored in advertising and promotion. I've always been more of a creative person, but I got a lot of the, oh boy, I hope you have a backup plan,
right,
during school for my art degree. So that's why I chose my minor in advertising. I do love the business side, and that's kind of why I chose my minor as a backup, but where I could use my design skills in a more stable environment.
Yeah, that's so funny. Before we move on to Sabrina a second, we've done another podcast with some design people, and that seems to be, and I understand why, yeah. The overwhelming, usually it's parents.
Right.
If we're paying for this, you need to have some sort of job when you leave, so what's that going to be?
Yes, no starving artists.
So. That's right, exactly. All right, Sabrina, tell us about yourself.
Hi, I'm Sabrina. I'm a recent college graduate with a bachelor's degree of fine arts and graphic design. Initially, my passion was in publication design, and it still is, but the world is becoming more digital, so I figured it was more practical initially to design for a digital experience, so now I've developed into that passion too. My college experience was during the pandemic, so e-learning was a large part of my college experience, and that, I guess we'll get into it later, but that kind of attracted me to the learning industry too.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are some questions we definitely want to get into. So thank you all. You all have sort of varied backgrounds, but similar in that artistic, specifically when we think of creative, like the artistic fine art backgrounds. One of the cool things about working in our office is that you all have so many other amazing talents that I still remember one time, a long time ago, we sort of just had a fun day where we did a hidden talent day, and we asked everybody to bring in something representative of a hidden talent they thought other people wouldn't know about. Yeah, we're never going to do that again. So the development, the creative team, they just made us, like, they were bringing in full-fledged works of art, pottery, you know, music. And yeah, the rest of us, like, my cookies look terrible. So we're not ever doing that again. So my next question for all of you is, I've heard some threads already of, well, I needed something practical, whatever. But setting that aside, you were attracted to the learning industry kind of for a reason. So why don't you tell me what sort of it brought you to, and I know you've all had different journeys to get here. Sometimes it is just, I really needed a job. But so beyond what attracted you, what has sort of helped you stay here and develop a passion for the learning industry with the different backgrounds you've come out of?
Sure, I can go first. I think the original, what made me apply at first was, for one, the job posting started as a senior graphic design position, which attracted me. But then when I was reading the description, I really liked the emphasis on education and learning. I do really like learning new things. Like, I want to learn as much as I possibly can before I pass away.
No, I was going to say, the good news is you have a lot of time. You're very young.
I liked being in education. I liked my time at college. So that is kind of what made me follow through on actually applying for the job and then accepting the interview. And then afterwards, what's keeping me here for the most part is, one, I get to learn something new every single day. Mm-hmm. My projects are very diverse. They're some graphic design learning experience. There are lots of different things, and I get the opportunity to upgrade or learn new skills, but then also about just new topics. Like, for example, I know a lot about water heaters now for no reason, because I worked on a water heater project. But I've also done like projects for colleges. And so that's what I really enjoy and what I hope to keep doing in the learning industry, is to continue to learn more about anything and everything.
Yeah, we're definitely, we like to say, a mile wide and an inch deep. So yeah, I mean, you could all, and we've talked about this before, you could all talk about roofing houses, or you could talk about perhaps selling cosmetics, or leadership skills, or wire. And yeah, I don't know that I could do any of those things super effectively, but I feel like I know something
right
about them.
Got a foot in the door there.
Yeah. But I love what you say, Alyssa, about, you know, even in hiring, like the concept of being curious and wanting to learn more. And I'm interested to hear if that is a thread with all of you. So Emma, tell us what brought you to the learning industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a bit of a minimalist, so I love the idea of using my background of design and advertising to fill people with knowledge rather than consumerism. So using the psychology of consumer behavior for learning materials and retention rather than physical goods is what really attracted me in my design journey to apply for positions. So
not so much the whole like selling more,
correct,
but the idea of doing something a little more. Again, you're helping people learn and
absolutely
contributing to humankind.
Yes. Like,
okay. Yeah. I love that. That's a deep answer. So I really like that. That's great. Sabrina, what about you?
As I said before, I was a college student during the pandemic, so e-learning was a really large part of my college experience. And like, even now I am partially still motivated by like my own ineffective and difficult e-learning experiences like while I was in college. I remember a lot of times thinking in my classes, like, this would be so much more digestible and easy to learn if this was designed or presented in a different way. Hmm. Like, for example, like too much info compacted on like a presentation screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little corny, but overall, like, I thought it was really cool to like be part of some kind of change and make a deeper impact on someone, to make what like I feel is a greater impact on viewers than say like just advertising or convincing someone to buy a product. And like being part of someone's learning experience and contributing to that is really cool in my experience. And even though I'm not like directly writing the content, being a part of this industry, like, it really gives you an opportunity to help the user effectively and easily learn new information and have a positive e-learning experience, which I didn't always have. So
yeah,
I feel like that's really cool to help contribute to that.
No, I love that. I mean, I think that resonates with our listeners too. So you don't really go into education or the learning and development industry for paycheck. You know, it's typically altruistic, the desire to help people, the desire to contribute to society, to help people learn or to move further along in their journey, wherever they are. So but it's very interesting to me to hear all three of you echo threads of that, which also lets me know that it's a pretty special place to work. Like, that's a cultural thing. That's really amazing.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to try not to embarrass Alyssa, but I will say that, I think Alyssa had the best ever interview.
True. She did.
So you were in on that. You want to tell our listeners what Alyssa walked in with?
Oh, man. She walked in with cookies. She walked in with package design. She walked in with learning materials all ready for us, which she hadn't even known yet exactly what we do. So it was amazing.
Yeah. If I go to interview, I'm coming 110% prepared. So
yeah. Well, you
and
had
a little bit of bribery in there too. That's with the cookies.
Right. You had us with the cookies, but they were packaged. So there was package design with our name on it. And then there was an e-learning video she had made that showed us how she made the cookies, which I mean, I couldn't say it at the time, but I was like, hand me the cookie, you're hired. Let's just go. But what I wanted to call out with that is kind of the creativity and ingenuity with that. And there's a bit of a dichotomy that often happens in our industry, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have all three of you on here, because, you know, thinking through, like, how does a visual designer bring a fresh perspective? And it's sort of a traditional model. An instructional designer creates material, interviews subject matter experts, creates materials, and uses their software tool, what's available to them, to make materials. And that is an expected job description of a learning experience designer or an instructional designer. We've talked about this before on other podcasts, but we've developed a little bit of a different model where we have two teams that work very closely together, and our design instructional design team works very closely with this development creative design team, because the way that you think is different and you bring a very fresh perspective to whatever learning experience we're designing. And that's something that we wanted to kind of talk through today. What is that perspective? Were there challenges that you faced, right? Like in your minds, kind of transitioning from this role of graphic designer or in advertising or marketing to the learning industry. And then I think even, you know, many of our listeners are like learning and design or learning and development L&D managers. And should this be something they're looking for? Maybe they need to look more for this type of mindset and this type of skill set and then teach software later along the way, because it's been very successful. Mm-hmm. But we just want to unpack what that looks like. So in your experience, and I've heard you already pull threads of this, but how does your strong background in visual design really help you create a stronger learning experience?
Yeah, so I think something that's really helped me is, so when I applied for the job, the description had mentioned Storyline specifically, and other e-learning tools. And like, I had never heard of Storyline before. I'd never heard of Articulate, like anything like that. So, I know I had, looked into it more before coming to the interview, and that's what I made, the tutorial of how I created the cookies was, my first, like toe dip into the e-learning industry was just that little practice project. But I remember, seeing Articulate for the first time, I was like, this looks a lot like PowerPoint in some ways. It's very similar to some other tools I've used before. And I've done a lot of visual design work in PowerPoint. So to me, it was a little easier to jump into because I had experience in a somewhat similar tool. But then also the end goal is still the same regardless of the tool that you're using. So whether you're using Adobe products or Articulate Storyline, whatever you're using, your end goal is a great visual experience. So it's just tying in the learning aspect from, say, Alex designers or instructional designers and taking their information, and it's still visual communication in a way. It's just a little more interactive, and it's more focused on knowledge gained and behavior change than it is on, as Emma and Sabrina have mentioned, consumerism. So that's what helped me kind of go from just visual design into learning, was that it thinking about the purpose and then boiling it down, it is just visual communication in some way.
Okay, so you're saying again the difference in like it's still user centric. You're still thinking about, we call them learners. You mm-hmm. might in, you know, the industry call them a user or whatever that might be, the consumer. Mm-hmm. But you had to sort of shift your mindset around, instead of I'm trying to sell something or promote something or a call to action, instead I am trying to help someone either acquire more knowledge or learn new skills or change attitudes and mindsets. But you're still putting your, what I hear you say is you're still putting yourself in the position mm-hmm. of that end user. Like, how are they going to see this material? Mm-hmm. How are they going to be motivated?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like if say in my past, if I'm building a website, I have to think about like what's on screen. What is the first thing you see is the, like, if I have a website where I'm trying to say sell something, what's getting the user to that point to sign up for, say, mm-hmm. like a gym membership, that kind of thing. How are they getting to what they need? So if they're on this main screen, there's a big old button that says, here, sign up for this membership. Are they able to sign up for the membership that they want to? Or are they being turned away from the website? They're like, this looks terrible. Why am I here? Like, I don't want a gym membership to hear. So it's using those same principles for learning experience.
Yeah, and we kind of call that intentional design. So not mm-hmm. only is the learner experiencing engaging visual content? All of the incorporated design is considering the user retention as well and ensuring benefits to the learning experience as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where all of us are using our design experience in that sort of way of making sure that the user retention is really high and that they're just really understanding the content and it's reinforced in their learning.
Yeah, absolutely. So that retention and reinforcement, to a certain degree, that's always present in marketing materials too, right? Because, you know, we've all had that like jingle that gets caught in your head. You can never get rid of it.
Exactly.
But the end result is something a little different. It's not a call to action so much as it is you're actually trying to change attitudes or beliefs or knowledge or skills. And so it tends to be a more in-depth process and a more, again, our learning experiences, learning is never like a one and done.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I'm hearing you sort of say, I think you're taking your initial design visual thinking, but you're really expanding on it.
Yeah. And there's so many visual learners too. So some people remember that jingle and other people remember that infographic and that's tattooed in their brain of, okay, now when I'm inserting this catheter, okay, I remembered exactly how to do this from the previous learning module that I went through.
Well, and yeah, great illustration.
So sorry.
Great mental visual. No. And
vein catheter, not catheter catheter.
Also vein catheters. That is correct. Although that is always a fun aspect to this content too, right? Like do we have to watch for people passing out in their seats as they're watching videos and trying to design it. So Sabrina, did you have something you wanted to add in terms of just like how does your thinking help you design a better learning experience?
Yeah, so Alyssa and Emma already like kind of touched on this, but like more specifically, like my background, like in graphic design, like taught me like specifically like gestalt principles are really important. Mm-hmm. Like they're really important in graphic design and in turn, like really important in e-learning design. Like for example, gestalt principles are like similarity, continuation, mm-hmm. closure, proximity, figure ground, and symmetry and order. And like an example of using like gestalt principles would be like patterns, which help create like a sense of order and establish a relationship between different ideas in like your e-learning module, for example, without explicitly like writing out that. And another point would be like repetition, like building a theme by repeating colors, icons, words, etc. And this also like helps organize information really well. So I think, yeah, the gestalt principles are like something that was hammered into me in college
right.
and like has really like, it still sticks with me to this day is these are really important and they are really relevant to e-learning design as well as regular graphic design.
Yeah, and they're really important in any kind of learning. So that's the interesting thing too. We spend a lot of time talking about learning science. And so that those principles really apply to any field, how the brain works, how your emotions work, how all those kinds of things. And those principles you're talking about apply to any kind of learning. And there's an element of learning in marketing or advertising too. So, we have, you know, people listening who might be considering a career change to this field, or maybe they're in a learning field right now, but interested in sort of, you know, brushing up on their design skills, specifically visual design type skills. And I think more likely we have L&D managers listening to this podcast and they're thinking, I hired some developers, or maybe I have some graphic designers that work in the marketing department, or I'm looking for my next hire. I mean, this business is booming right now, obviously. And what advice would you give them? So, because we kind of made a pivot. We have definitely hired people with animation experience, game design experience, straight e-learning developer experience, but we've made a bit of a pivot. We often look for people such as yourself. That's why you're here with that visual, graphic, fine art design experience, who we then teach the software to, because that's a little easier to do. But the way you think, you just do amazing things, expanding the boundaries of that software. So what kind of advice would you give somebody looking to hire, or maybe from your perspective, like what was the hardest thing when you had to sort of shift your mindset to a different industry? Because I think that gives insight into managers too. If they hire someone such as yourself, what do they need to do in the onboarding process to help them kind of mentally pivot?
Yeah, I think something that one has helped me, and that's something that I like to look for when we're interviewing e-learning developers or potential e-learning developers who might have experience in something else, is two things mainly, is a strong eye for branding and consistency when it comes to visual aspects, so colors, fonts, that kind of thing, which seem very minute, but it's really important when it comes to learning. Like if you're using the same color for, say, a certain button and then you suddenly change it up, mm-hmm. like in the learner's mind, that could mean that that's something totally different, and even if it might be doing the same thing. So strong branding to me is a good thing to look for. And then the second thing that again has helped me is my experience and background with coding, specifically like HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. A lot of authoring tools operate on JavaScript or other similar coding languages. So when it comes to, say, really intense interactions, that kind of thing, my coding is like, a lot of it uses that same logic, if then statements. If you do this, say you change the state of the button, whatever, what have you, you can build some really strong interactions that you might not think are possible in authoring tools if you just think of it in a different way.
So not only perhaps somebody with a graphic design or visual design background, but also perhaps like web designers or developers, this is a great field for them to get into too, in terms of, because you do use those kinds of the HTML and the different code, and it's just a way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody else have some advice? Like what was the hardest thing or what helped, what was different?
Yeah. I don't know if it would be the hardest part, but, a really critical part is designing off of the script. Mm-hmm. So reinforcing the flow, the visuals to emphasize the audio emphasis is super important to help both those auditory and visual learners. So rather than just getting some information for an infographic, something static, but making sure that you're reinforcing the script and having things moving and flowing and hitting those key points and making sure that your visual is backing it up is really important in designing for e-learnings.
So obviously time, mm-hmm. time-based, right? I mean, it's video and aligning audio. And yeah. I mean, it's been a while since I've done this, but you know, when you have transitions or you have animation that occurs on the screen, that either needs to, in terms of cognitive overload, that needs yep. to happen either as that word is said or just slightly behind it, because mm-hmm. if it comes on earlier mm-hmm. than your script, at least from what I understand, that causes that cognitive dissonance, because
yes.
it's like, well, I'm seeing this picture but I still don't know what it is and my mind's trying to make sense of it, then I hear the audio,
right?
So it has to be timed up perfectly, or if, you know, for a variety of reasons it could come in slightly different or slightly behind, but I've got that audio going, so I've set in my head like a mental context for why this image is coming.
Exactly. And something that's also backing up those important points too, because you can make something look really nice and mm-hmm. have it make no sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just making sure that you're reinforcing exactly what's being spoke so that it's being, sorry, I lost it for a second.
No, you just said...
Oh,
if you're thinking of it, I wanted to add just a little bit to what you had said about kind of aesthetics. Like, yeah, it's nice to have something that's visually appealing to the eye, but that's not the most important part. It's more, again, everything boils down to learning experience. But strong visuals also help learners mm-hmm. learn. If something is ugly, like,
right.
at least in my experience,
right.
if something's ugly, I'm distracted by how ugly it is. So something else to keep in mind.
For sure. I feel like sometimes I'm the worst consumer ever, because even, you know, I'm looking for something to purchase something online or a new service, and I go to a website, if it's not aesthetically pleasing, or heaven help them if there's a typo, because I am a grammar nerd. I'm like, nope, done. Like, yeah, if really. You're... Go ahead.
That's like, that's what you remember. Is there was clearly a typo. Like they're supposed to be good at writing, whatever.
Yeah.
Like you remember that for a long time.
So. Yeah, I'm moving on. Not going to use this. Absolutely. Sabrina, what do you think?
I was kind of thinking the same thing Emma was, like, for the hardest part for me, like, coming from, like, a passionate print design mm-hmm. background, I never really thought about, like, auditory aspects mm. or, like, maybe different types of learners, like, than just visual or verbal learners, maybe. That was something I really didn't think about, and then really had to... I had to think about like coming into this type of industry, because we do have sound a lot of times, and mm-hmm. sound is a really important aspect to these e-learning modules. And overall, like I think including elements in your e-learning that cater to some or all would be good.
Right. All right. Well, we've already been sort of sniffing around this subject, so I'm just going to call it out a little bit. You've really been talking about the user experience. So it's a somewhat new concept in the tech industry and in, say, instructional design, although the thinking's been around for forever, right? And if your background is in graphic design, that's always been a constant. But I think that UX and then also sort of tangentially UI has always been associated with good web design. It's making its way and has been in the world of digital learning now for a while, but it's becoming increasingly more important. It used to be, as long as like we were using the software and it was online, yay, like that was good enough. It's not even close to that anymore, right? I mean, the design has, as you said, has to be beautiful, visually appealing, error-free, and now to the point of my user needs to have a fantastic experience as they're going through this. So, the official term UX was coined by Don Norman in like early 90s. I'm pretty sure you weren't, none of you even alive at that point, but that's beside the point. But what won't surprise the listeners to this podcast is that he was a cognitive psychologist. So we keep talking about learning science because it applies to so much, right? And the user has a better experience when things are laid out, when they're visually appealing. And so it's very interesting that a cognitive psychologist would be the one to start to talk about these ideas. But let's talk about some real basic fundamentals. You all are experts in this area. So what are some UX fundamentals that you think about as you're designing?
I think layout is the first thing I look at. So depending on the branding for the project is something else I take into consideration. So some branding guidelines might already have layout options for you, say if you're using an app or a website. So depending on your authoring tool, you can also apply those same templates and principles to your e-learning course. But I think then the next part is based off the branding guidelines, color. So as I mentioned earlier, consistency in color is really important. And using color to reinforce the brand of, say, the client or the company that is doing the training so that the learner remembers that they're doing this course, say, for their employer or whatever company it is.
Well, and doesn't color can set the mood. So we have branding guidelines, but then we also have, for example, traditionally, if I see red on a page, like it often, not always, but it can be fun and exciting, but it can also indicate to me like stop, or especially if I'm using it in coordination with red, yellow, green, like that instantly. And if you flip that on me and red is supposed to mean go and green is supposed to mean stop, I am all confused and not having a great experience. And then there's even the traditional issues with color, which I think have, you know, by and large, it's just accepted anymore. But there's certain colors we just don't use in digital. Like we're not going to use fluorescent green because it's hard to see, and people with visual issues, that makes it even harder. Fluorescent yellow or those kinds of things. But color is hugely important to the user experience. So I'm glad you brought that up. What other fundamentals do we have?
So with thinking about the learner, we do the learner profiles, which applies more on the instructional design side probably, but it is really fundamental for the development side as well, because we need to be aware of the learner and know their profile so that we know if there's any language, demographics, those sort of thing, that we're making sure that the design is consistent with that learning. So we're not going to do a really complicated design if this is someone learning at a fifth grade level.
For sure.
So there's learning or knowing the learner profile is what helps us design as well. And so that also, if your learner profile is someone that's in the C-suite, let's say, you're not going to do a cartoon character that's taking them through the module, that sort of thing. We really want to know those profiles to make sure that we're designing for the learner and making their experience what they expect it to be.
Yeah. And even their motivation too. So, we've done a project fairly recently, but it was fast food, and so their typical employee in that situation is fairly young, and it's probably not a career, at least in the learning experiences we were designing. So visually, from the instructional design standpoint, from the graphic, everything, it needs to be extremely motivating, extremely fun, extremely interesting, because it has to grab and hold their attention.
Absolutely.
So knowing that learner is a huge piece, and it's not something, like you said, just for the instructional designers. It's really important for everyone to really understand.
Yes.
Know your audience.
Know your audience. Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything else? Anything else in those user experience fundamentals that we would want our listeners to know?
I mean, I think Alyssa and Emma already covered a lot of the things I think of immediately. But I would also say focal points are really important to keep in mind. Like, what is the viewer going to be attracted to first or see first? Mm. Like, if you want the viewer to see a different portion before another portion, you have to, like, be aware of that. And, like, the focal point's important because it draws attention to, like, the most important parts of a course. And then that leads to, like, order, like, how typically the viewer is going to see them. Like, obviously, the viewer can, like, jump around, mm-hmm. but... Yeah.
You're helping me channel my inner HGTV designer now. Like, what's the focal point of the room? But you're 100% right. Sometimes we might design for engagement, but if that piece of content isn't actually the main focus of the content, but I have this big splashy thing, it can actually be distracting, even though it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So that's a great point.
There, a lot of the courses too that we build, they are not just very linear. Mm-hmm. We have them going all over the place. We really want the learner to feel that they're like choosing their own adventure, mm-hmm. essentially. So those focal points too of, hey, now I need to click on, or I could potentially click on this. We need to make sure that they know that, because if it's something that's hidden and they wouldn't even know, they're going to miss a big chunk of the learning. So we got to make sure that they're knowing, like, oh, okay, this is flashing. Okay, I better
There's visual
click that.
Cues. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, like choosing your own adventure is a good way to describe it. But like at the same time, you want to know like the typical path that people will take. Mm. And like I was saying earlier, like you can jump around, but people generally like on instinct tend to go for like the same things or are drawn to the same things.
Yeah, that's interesting balance. And that again is some learning science of, I need to feel comfortable enough as I go through that I know how to navigate and it's not scary to me. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if I've done that for 15 minutes, I'm now pretty bored. And so the element of like adding additional information or the unexpected or a surprise within the confines of something that feels comfortable is important for a user. Mm-hmm. I love that. I know one thing in our discussion prior to this podcast, you all had mentioned, it's such a practical tip. In a perfect world, we pilot everything, right? But I know our listeners and I know ourselves, you know, we don't often have time to pilot. But in terms of user experience, you all shared, it's pretty simple, pretty easy thing you can do to at least make sure your user experience is at a minimum functioning. And what is that? Like, what can you do if you can't do a full-blown pilot?
Have someone you know that's not in the industry just test it out for you. Just see what they do and just kind of watch what they do, because if you do a coworker, we get used to it. So
yeah,
we know those things to look for. Yes, having someone outside of the industry test for you and just kind of see what they do for like 5-10 minutes, you'll know.
So what you're saying is there's probably a large group of friends or significant others that also have tried a lot of the materials you've made sitting at home.
My husband has been fully engrossed in my designs that I've made, and I'm like, oh no, you didn't see that, oh shoot, I gotta start over again. But
that's a great practical tip, right?
Yes.
Yeah, viewers are not always gonna like see the same things you do, especially if you've been staring at it for a super long time. They're gonna view different things or like be initially attracted to different things on your design.
Yeah, that's a great point. Just having anybody take a look is very helpful. All right. Well, you all are so artistic. When working with you, I feel kind of like that little child who brings like their crumpled paper and like gives it to an adult, and you all make the stuff I have look amazing. So I love that. And so that's why I'm also excited to ask you the question that we end the podcast with, which is, what are you learning well now? Because I always want to get a peek into a creative mind and see what kinds of things are you interested in. It could be within our industry or outside of our industry that you're learning now. So Emma, go ahead and share it with us.
Yeah, well, mine actually is not industry related at all.
That's great.
So I am a first-time mom, and I am learning so much every single day about just...
You're learning everything.
Yes, everything. And she's learning everything, and it's amazing. But right now, we're getting into foods, which is great for me. So I'm super excited. I'm learning about baby-led weaning and different purees and stuff. But that's really fun for me now because I'm getting to like create with her and learn different stuff and her sensory things and Montessori method and all this different stuff. And it's just really exciting for me of learning through her eyes of such a young, I'm used to creating for adults. So learning with her, it's amazing.
It's a totally different world when you're looking through and adult and adult learning.
Yes.
And then, you know, child development.
Yes.
Very different.
Very different.
Yeah. Great. That's exciting. Sabrina, how about you? What are you learning well now?
So this is kind of like interior design related, but...
Great. No, I love that.
Yeah, that kind of is in relation to like design overall, but I just bought a house, so I keep like...
Hey!
That's awesome. Congratulations.
I keep like imagining in my free time like how I'm going to lay out different things in my house and like what I'm going to hang on the walls and like how I'm going to make the most of the space that I have. And I feel like that also applies to design and like e-learning design specifically, because you want to like know how to use all the space you have. Maybe not necessarily like filling it with something, like empty space is important, but yeah, like knowing how to use the space you have.
I love that. Actually, on a recent podcast, we talked about ways that creative people kind of keep creativity and like get inspired outside of the field that we live in. And that was one of the things that I said personally for me. I like to sew. I like color and like texture and interior design. So, and there's nothing more exciting than a new house. So congratulations. Alyssa, what about you?
Something that I learned very recently. So I had to take my cat to the vet the other day, just a regular checkup, like nothing too bad. But as I've learned since I have adopted her, that I'm learning a lot about cats' gums and teeth
and
upper respiratory infections. So I'm learning a lot of how to be patient with my animals so that I can brush her teeth. And so I'm sure many of you either have cats or can maybe imagine how hard it is to brush a cat's teeth.
That sounds really interesting.
Very important, because potentially they might have to like, you know, pull all her teeth out, and that would not be fun either. So I'm learning a lot about how to, one, train a cat to let me brush her teeth effectively, so that she can have a healthy life.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask one follow-up question to that, because I'm very curious. How are you learning that? Is that like your vet telling you? YouTube videos? Well, what's going on
YouTube
there?
YouTube videos.
Practical.
Vet, and then also just seeing what works best for my cat specifically.
Okay.
I trial and error, maybe a few scratches here and there. But so far I think we're every time I brush her teeth, we both get better at it.
I love that. That's that immersive learning, right? Like you just have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Does she bite you less over time?
She doesn't bite. She definitely squirms a lot. So it's more like, luckily she's not too aggressive with it. She's just very squirmy. And so trying to, you know, get her to sit still while I can do it.
Well, thank all three of you. I just so appreciate your willingness to come and kind of let us sort of peek under the hood, so to speak, of your creative minds and how you think about design in a little bit different way. And I want to thank our listeners today, too. So we know that your time is a gift, and we really appreciate you spending the time and listening. If you want to interact with us, you can find us on InnoVersity's Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. Anytime we release a new podcast, you can look for the Learning Well podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.